It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here as we continue to edge towards the next big feature update on Windows. What's new, what's different, and a nonsense feature that's disappeared entirely. Paul Thurrott has some news about Minecraft and a great beer to wrap up the week. It's all coming up next. Oh, the week's not over? On Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 583, recorded Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. Trigger Hips. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Qualcomm Snapdragon. According to Ookla, Android smartphones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm had faster data speeds on AT&T and T-Mobile than non-Android phones with Intel modems, based on over a million real-world tests done Q2 2018. See all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together with the two sharpest minds in the shed.
Wow. That's quite a shed.
Sharpest
mess we got, huh?
Tools in the shed.
Sharpest tacks in the box.
The sharpest, yes. The most resilient rubber bands in the...
Most misplaced Lego on the bottom of your foot.
Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley, ZDNet.com, and we are here to talk Microsoft. Hello. Okay. This is...
Leo.
No, I guess I'll be here next week, and then then it will be my last week, and I will be out for...
How dare you?
Out for a few episodes.
Having fun.
I hope having
fun. I'm sure
fun.
You will.
I look forward to having some fun.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, have you all been having fun?
Not too much fun.
Come on. What's new with Paul and Mary Jo? Well, there's a major I see here. Mm-hmm. Snapdragon update.
Yep.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I just saw the ARM roadmap through, 2023 or something? Mm-hmm. 2025?
Yeah, that factors into this.
Because, I thought it was interesting. I mean, usually roadmaps are, what is Intel typically? A year? 2 years?
Well, this one's notable because Qualcomm has never provided a roadmap.
Ever.
And this one is specifically for PC chips.
Well, that's the thing
this is not Qualcomm. I mean, I'm sorry. This is ARM.
ARM. Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting.
The company that designs and licenses the chips.
Yeah. They were basically saying, we'll be ready for the desktop and the server room and everywhere else.
Yeah, so that announcement was interesting, because, first of all, it was unprecedented. Secondly, there was a little bit of subterfuge going on there. What they were basically saying was, by this time next year,
right,
there will be PCs in the market based on our chipsets that rival the Intel Core i5 chips that they were shipping 2 years ago. And they didn't say it that way, but that's what they were actually saying.
Okay.
Now,
still, that's a jump. That's a leap.
Yeah, no, to be clear, that's humongous. That's huge. And for all the excitement I think we have as Windows or PC enthusiasts around Intel moving in this current generation of quad-core chips for the U-series processors that are very common on laptops, for example, and the rumors that they're going to go even higher than that in subsequent generations, the truth is a dual-core Core i5 from last year or whatever is not just fine. It's perfect. I mean... if you look at any, like a MacBook Air is maybe a bad example. It's older, but a Surface Pro from last year or the Surface laptop.
Yeah.
Four parts. That's perfect for productivity work. It's perfect. So if they can get there, that's humongous.
And you get, I presume, extravagant battery life to go along with it.
And connectivity and standby time. And that's why this stuff is exciting. So The news that I have, so to speak, is that there's been a lot of rumors in the Qualcomm space and the Windows 10 and ARM space about what's coming next. And we know that very soon now, the first PCs based on the second generation Qualcomm, well, actually, I guess we could call it the first generation for PCs specifically, the 850, will be announced. Qualcomm had previously said you could expect a 30% performance boost. Across the board, graphics and just general performance, I think it was a 20% increase in battery life, which is actually crazy when you think about 20 hours of battery life being the norm, and improved LTE speeds as well. And then beyond that, there have been rumors about a Snapdragon 1000, which seemed even more powerful, and many people, myself included, sort of theorized at the time that this might even be aimed at desktop chips, that desktop computers, that they're actually moving ahead fast enough to kind of compete in that arena.
What do we have in the NVX2? That's an 835, right?
Yeah. So,
and that's the one that's kind of inadequate, frankly, to desktop.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Inadequate is. yeah, and it's, you know, the way I describe that computer, which is a beautiful computer, but is very slow, is, you know, you make these compromises in design, and I just feel like the compromises there are kind of like the compromises in Surface Go, although they don't match up quite evenly. It's just not the right compromises, right? And it's no one person's fault or whatever, no one company's fault. It's a number of things. But the performance is just abysmal. The battery life is tremendous. The connectivity is wonderful. But there are compatibility issues too. 64-bit apps don't run, especially desktop apps. So you can't run things like Photoshop. And so there are improvements to be had. Some of these things will occur just with the passage of time. Driver makers, hardware device peripheral makers, will start porting their drivers and utility apps over to ARM. That will help. Adobe could fix the problem with Adobe Photoshop Elements, at least, by creating a 64-bit version for ARM in the store. It's basically a compiler switch. Qualcomm seems to think that'd be an easy fix. And then
I want to see Edge get fixed for ARM.
Well, you know, baby steps, right? So
that's a legitimate question: is how much of this is Windows' fault and how, you know, Microsoft's fault?
I know. I don't know. How can we tell that even?
Well, fault is a tough word. I mean, so yeah. You know, one thing that Microsoft has done throughout the years, and Apple, by the way, has done it as well in OS X or in the Mac as well, is they've always had these versions for other processor architectures, and so they have this kind of history of making this thing work. One of the interesting tidbits that came out around this Windows 10 on ARM thing is that the subsystem they created actually works exactly the way that 32-bit application compatibility works on 64-bit versions of Windows. It's the same kind of thing. So they, making it happen is one thing. Making it happen in such a way that it is performant enough for normal people, I think, is a combination of just the inherent power of the processor. And then in the efficiency of the software emulation that they're doing, you know, you can't really point and say, oh, this is Microsoft's fault, or, you know, oh, this is, you know, Qualcomm's fault or ARM's fault or whatever. Yeah.
You know, the other part, I've brought this up a few times, but I'm curious on the Edge part, how much is it Edge versus websites not being optimized to run for Edge on ARM?
Yeah. So it could also be the content.
Right.
Yeah.
Like TweetDeck is my big example, right? If you use TweetDeck in Edge on ARM, it's just basically not usable.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Edge
being kind of a side story here, I think is actually an important thing to discuss, because Edge is a built-in app. It's unique among the built-in apps in that it is sort of a desktop app, sort of a store app, but it's not available through the store. It's only bundled with Windows 10. It's kind of integrated into the operating system, which should remind everyone of the DOJ case in the early 2000s when Microsoft was proven in court to have artificially integrated Internet Explorer into Windows specifically to gain an advantage over competitors, that there's no actual, you know, reason to do that. No one else does it to this day. And yet they're still doing it with Edge, right? It's strange. And there's been some talk that's long since disappeared about maybe we'll pull it out of there and you can get it in the store and it'll be like a store app and we can update it all the time. And they just haven't done it. And it's really unclear why.
Yeah. They've never said they won't, right? Like when they get asked in like Reddit sessions or whatever, they're always like, yeah, that's on the roadmap. But they've never said when or why it's taking so long.
you've probably gotten this response more than once. You know, Microsoft is continually evaluating how we deliver solutions to our customers. You know, it's one of those like, whatever. I mean, we don't know. So I don't edge on arm. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what to say, but you run the NVX2. It's a gorgeous piece of hardware. Mm-hmm. The connectivity stuff is awesome, but you know, you can get that on Intel, I guess, in a few systems. You know, the standby stuff is kind of incredible. You know, I just got home from Sweden. I got all my computers out of storage and they all sat there and died while I was away. The batteries, I had to like charge everything up again. These systems don't do that. I mean, they do drain battery obviously over time, but just not as badly. Mm-hmm. There are huge advantages to this platform. And the thing I can't quite explain is why I think Mary Jo would agree with this. I do anyway, have this desire for this to work, you know,
the
benefits this thing brings if you could combine it with, you know, performance that made sense.
I should probably at this point interject the disclaimer that Qualcomm is a sponsor of this show, but that don't let that impede
let me dump on Qualcomm for a few minutes.
Please do.
I mean, the first for it, look, there's no way around whether we're pointing fingers, you know, it doesn't really matter who's at fault. The first generation, the 835, which was used on smartphones originally, is just not up to the task.
Yeah,
it's just
systems. Clear. Yeah.
As much as I want to hand you this thing, this beautiful HPXP, you know, NVX2, and say you should buy this, I can't. It's just the performance is too. It's just too lousy. So they want to fix this, and they're serious about fixing it, and they're doing what they're doing with other markets, and they're starting to develop Qualcomm. That is starting to develop processors that are specifically designed for those markets.
How closely are they tied to the ARM? Timeline.
That's what I just found out about. So when ARM came out with that announcement a week or two ago, it kind of came out of left field. Like, what was the point of this? Like, they've never done that before. And how does it relate to what Qualcomm has said and what Qualcomm is rumored to be doing in the future? As it turns out, they match up exactly. So this roadmap that they provides a roadmap to the second, third, maybe fourth generations what Qualcomm will release in each of the subsequent years. The Qualcomm chips are based very heavily. They are, you know, they're based on the ARM reference design. I talked to Ryan Shroud, who I think you guys both know about this topic.
He's the host of This Week in Computer Hardware, as well as
So he knows a little bit about hardware. he's a good guy.
Yep.
And
he's my expert. You know, he's my local expert for sure.
Yeah, he's. Well, I mean, I'm not a hardware guy, so I turned to Ryan when I need help with this stuff. So I asked him about this and some other things. I think it was last week. And yes, those things line up. And so the rumored Snapdragon 1000 is the next chip that that ARM chips is based on the chips that ARM said they were going to release by the end of this year. Qualcomm has an event in every December, and it is likely, therefore, that their version, you know, their take on that chipset will be announced at that time, and that the first PCs based on that chipset will either be announced at that event or possibly at CES, and that they will ship in the spring, roughly 1 year after the original generation shipped. It will kind of follow that same schedule, which kind of begs the question, if that's the case, why is Qualcomm going to release this other thing first, the 850, their first PC-centric chipset? And Ryan's speculation on that was that they felt the need to continue forward with this platform they had already announced for OEMs or for PC makers, that there are PC makers who will be announcing product very soon based on that chipset. And even though the performance, actually a 30% performance improvement is pretty impressive. The only worry I have is 30% over what they already have might not be enough. It's one of those things like real world, we need to see what that looks like because the current state is really bad. But that 30%, there's a battery life improvement. There are LTE speed improvements. It's still a step up. And the fact that in 1 year's time, essentially, PC makers will be able to, if they choose to, ship three subsequent generations of PCs based on new chipsets is actually really rapid. And that by spring of next year, we're going to have the Qualcomm-based Windows 10 on ARM PCs that offer the potential of somewhere like 200x performance improvement, he said. 2x, like 200% performance improvement. That's where they get into the Core i5 thing, right? So without sacrificing the battery life, without sacrificing the connectivity and the standby, the only question is, A, you know, what it looks like real world, but B, the compatibility stuff that I mentioned, right? So there's still this kind of weird thing there hanging out. You know, in other words, I might go buy an all-in-one printer and I plug it into Windows 10, or maybe it's a wireless thing, whatever it is. It should work in a basic sense because Windows 10 ships with class drivers, but that company, whoever they are, usually will ship some kind of utility software with driver updates and so forth. It will let you customize how things print or scan or whatever it is to a much higher degree. That stuff is never going to run on Windows 10 on ARM unless they create a version specifically for it. So will they ever do that? This is a chicken egg thing. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But the net result here is that by next spring, the belief is this: they actually will be competitive in the mainstream market, especially for portable computers.
The day that happens is a big deal. I mean, Intel's already down for the count. We were talking last Security Now yesterday about yet another speculation, speculative execution flaw, foreshadow, and this is just endless.
I know.
And while I don't know if ARM is completely immune, it certainly isn't subject to the same kinds of problems that the Intel chip is. Intel's they can't get a 10-nanometer part out to save their life.
And ARM is talking about 5-nanometer.
Yeah, right? I know. They've got a 7.
Next gen's going to be 7. 7, and then they're going to go 5.
So there's all sorts of reasons to think that this could be a sea change in how microprocessors work, you know, what we use.
Yeah, it's just, but it has to happen, right? So we've been talking about this a lot. I guess it was probably a year ago December. So let's say December 2016. I think Terry Marson was actually in China when he announced this, but he announced that Microsoft was porting Windows 10 to ARM again, you know, with this time with Qualcomm. And they formally announced the platform at the Qualcomm show last December. The first devices, there was only a couple of them shipped in the spring. And then soon we're going to see these second gen devices. But as of what we have right now, I believe there are 3 PCs out in the market. You know, the performance is bad. It's unacceptable. You know, and it's unfortunate because you want to love the thing. Especially the HP. I can't really speak for the others, but you know, the HP is light and thin, and the battery life is insane, and the connectivity stuff, like I said, is amazing.
Well, that's the other thing that changes a little bit. You know, LTE in laptops was something fairly commonplace. At least it was always an option. Then it started to disappear, and I think partly that's because people just use their phones as a hotspot. Mm-hmm. But having, I guess that's what we're saying, is we can give up a little performance if we get full-day battery life and high-speed LTE, or even, what happens if 5G is out in a couple of
years? Yeah, it's the compromise thing, right? I would be willing to sacrifice a little bit of performance. I've always been kind of interested in the good enough thing, you know?
Well, it's kind of also a second computer, or a computer for, as Jane always says, frontline workers who don't need performance. Mm-hmm. I'm going to always have a highly performance computer.
Of course. Yeah. But what if you didn't have to compromise? You know, like I said, I mean, you're not going to play games on this thing, but someone like Mary Jo or I, or you, who's out in the world and you open the laptop, you're going to surf and get email and type stories, maybe whatever it is, do a little bit light Photoshop. If this thing can match a dual core i5 from, you know, a year or
that's
two ago,
plenty good enough.
It's absolutely. Totally. And I want to be clear. I'm not settling here. It is literally good enough. I use computers like that all the time still. I love the Surface laptop.
The whole trade-off thing is the key, right? Like, for every user, it's different what you absolutely have as your must-have. Like, for me, it's the thin and light and battery. And so when you have those two things together, it's hard to have them in the same machine. Like, are you going to have a lot of great battery life if you have something really thin? Right now, no, right? But some people, you know, performance is the number one thing for them, and they don't care about the portability, or they don't care about the connectivity. And so I think it's, when people say, recommend me a PC, it's hard to do that because.
But if you meet a level, right? And I think that level is the dual core i5 from whatever generation you want to specify. I've been using a MacBook Pro a lot recently. This is a few generations old, at least. The Surface laptop and Surface Pro, like I said, are on previous gen, 7th gen dual core chips. It's not just okay, right? It's perfect for normal productivity. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You would never think anything of the performance. So if you can tack that onto 20 hours of battery life and seamless connectivity and unbelievable standby time, yes. Now, there's still a question again about compatibility, but it's that it gets really interesting there. That's the mainstream.
Yeah, I guess I feel like we keep hearing this is coming from ARM chips like forever.
Well, you know me.
I've kind of given up hope. I have to be frank about that.
Well, the reason I talked to Ryan. So I'm worried about it too. So remember, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, there was an early Snapdragon 850 benchmark leak.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
And you know, they reached out to me and said that's not fine. That's old hardware. It's not not representative of what's being
shipped.
Don't worry. Don't worry about that. Yeah. That's what they would say to me officially, right? So that was the first step toward this, because at that point I said I need to talk to Ryan about this. I need to understand. Yep. You know, those things we just discussed. How do the ARM announcements match up with what Qualcomm is planning? Mm-hmm. What can we expect from the 850 versus the thing that comes after the 850 with regards to performance? Yeah. And honestly, what I heard was good news.
Yeah. So the other thing to kind of put in the matrix of, you know, choices and trade-offs and stuff is how you use your PC. And I don't think we talk about this a lot, but you know, I remember when the Envy X2 came out, there was somebody at Microsoft who was an executive who said, I can use this for 2 weeks without charging the thing. And I'm like, how?
You know? I'm using a computer there.
But I believe the person was telling me the truth. Here's what they were doing. Every once in a while, going on, looking at email for like a couple minutes, you know, editing a spreadsheet for like 2 minutes, shutting it down, coming back the next day. But you and I, that's not how we use our computers, right? So you have to add that part to the mix too, like not just performance, but usage patterns and kind of how you use your PC.
Yep. A lot of times the question that a reader will ask is very leading, you know, and it almost answers the question for them. They'll say something like, I'm really interested in the Surface Go or in this Envy X2 or whatever it is, but I want to run Visual Studio. And you're like, okay, end of discussion. No, the answer is no. It doesn't matter if the thing will technically load after 27 minutes or whatever. This is not for, it's not for you. And you have an unbelievable selection of computers to choose from today. Mm-hmm. And we all do. No matter what your needs are, right? From 32 gigabytes of RAM, integrated discrete graphics, you know, huge high resolution screens, whatever, the gamut, it's all there. And I guess what I'm thinking though is, if this thing takes off, and again, it's a total pie in the sky in a way, but they could really take away the mainstream part of the PC market from Intel. And the reason is that Intel is really focusing on those areas where it has its own proficiencies, which are adding cores, you know, performance. Mm-hmm. They're getting into doing their own dedicated graphics. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to start shipping. I don't know if they'll call them SoCs, but they're these single board designs that will kind of be workstation versions of what the ARM/mobile world has been doing for a long time. Mm-hmm. You'll have every, you know, they kind of do today, obviously, but with better graphics.
Yeah. And AI, right? They're like really pushing on the whole AI high end. Well,
Of course. Whatever this year's nonsense marketing is. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. The other thing,
but,
too.
Here's the Surface Go is a good example, right? Mm-hmm. Because I saw in your article where you were talking about Qualcomm, you were like, you know, Surface Go, it's just not good for anybody. I think it is good for some people. I think not for you.
No.
I think there are people who could use it in a casual way.
That's right. I don't see. This is the thing. I don't think so.
Well,
I mean, right, that's fine. We can kind of disagree on that. But the rationale that a computer that is as slow as ARM and gets 4.5 to 5 hours of battery life and doesn't have a full-size keyboard and really can only run one app at a time effectively is like solves a problem. I don't know that it fills a gap we didn't already have, you know, and I think that's the issue, you know.
You want to hear the gap it solves for me?
Sure. Sure.
I just did this week. I have to go out for a while. You know, I know it's going to be like 2 to 3 hours. I've got a fully charged Go battery. Put the thing in my purse, take it. Why do I take it with me? In case something breaks and I have to force myself to use the little keyboard and write a story. I can't do that on my phone. And I don't want to carry my whole PC.
Okay. I mean, you're describing it's a kind of a nicety, case. But it's a, well, maybe it's not even that special of a case. I do agree that there is an enormous population of people who can do most of what they want to do on a phone. And occasionally they need to type on a full-size keyboard. And that solves that problem, I guess. I don't mean to say that's not a thing. But, you know, Brad took the Surface Go and for some reason, like an idiot, only the Surface Go when he was in New York recently for meetings. And then when we went to do the podcast, it wasn't even powerful enough to do the podcast. Yeah. So we couldn't record the show for 2 days because that was the only computer he brought.
Oops.
And, you know, and look, the dual core i5 thing I was just talking about is $799 right now. I don't, from Surface, and less expensive from other companies. Like, my point isn't, and yes, I guess what you're saying is the Surface Go is smaller, so it can fit in your bag.
Yeah.
And it's lighter and it's less of a burden. Yeah. And yeah, sure, of course. I mean, but I don't even know what to call that.
I know market. What that like, use case is.
Yeah.
Casual, I mean, casual computing, you know?
Casual computing. Yeah. Okay.
I guess because on that too, like I can look at the web on my phone, but when I need to see something, I need to see it a little bigger, and not because I'm blind, but because I want to get more of the context of what I'm seeing.
Oh, no, I'll say it's because I'm blind. The phone is too small. I prefer, like for me, reading. My wife reads on her phone. She reads the paper. She reads books. Mm-hmm. I could do it. I hate it. To me, the iPad mini form factor is perfect. The fact that Apple is ignoring this device and it's totally slow and terrible now makes me sad. But to me, that's just right for reading. Right. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. Yep. And yeah, it's another thing I carry. I mean, I guess I could read on a laptop, you know, but I travel, I bring that too. And it's maybe the same reason you brought the Go with you on that recent outing. You know, you kind of put it in your bag and you don't really notice it that much.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a pound and a half. It's like, okay, I have way heavier things in my bag.
I mean, a Surface. Well, I mean, I don't know. There are different options that people have, right? Like iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. I mean, off the top of my head, know exactly how it matches up to the Surface Go from a size perspective. I suspect they're very similar when you include the keyboard cover. Yeah. Be a great device to read on. Mm-hmm. Super performant. Great battery life, by the way. Also integrated connectivity if you want it. And the keyboard is not horrible. And for that occasional, I think I might have to type today. Great, here it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also comes with a pencil. Well, it doesn't come with a pencil, but you can get a pencil. Yeah, it's very similar to Surface.
Yeah, I think they were thinking when they did this, the audience is people who do a single task, like first-line worker, right? You're doing one thing. You're not running five apps. You're not trying to produce a podcast. Yeah. You're like doing a check mark. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Okay. Or young children who won't care about the little tiny keyboard, right? Doing schoolwork, schoolwork. I think they've got like little niches they've thought about this for. But to then say it's also a device for consumers, that's when you start getting into, I don't know, what kind of consumers and what kinds of scenarios. Yeah. Like I've seen some people say it's for old people. I disagree. Yeah.
They don't deserve anything good.
Right.
They're dying.
I'm like, no, I don't think that's it.
As an old person, I resent
that. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I saw someone say, it's for your mother. I'm like, oh,
even
God,
worse.
I would never do that to my mother.
You know, my mother is a COBOL programmer.
Yeah, exactly.
She needs a little bit more.
My mother has an iPad and she has an Echo. You know, I feel like those devices are suitable for her. But regardless, I think people listening to this fall into this category. People who would read our websites, you know. Yeah. We tend to be on the Windows enthusiast side of the spectrum or the Microsoft enthusiast, whatever you want to call it. And I do fear for the kind of collective delusion that occurs when it's like, well, it's, you know, I'm going to make this work for me. You know, it's good enough. You know, it's like, I had a guy in my site tell me, he's like, I'm going back to Windows Phone. I can't stand Android. It's like, okay. You're like, okay. You know, it's 2018, right? I mean,
I've seen people do crazy things to make the battery last longer. Like, I turn the screen brightness down to 20%.
Oh,
I'm like, no.
I hate that. Oh, so sad.
I think we kind of punch ourselves in the face a little bit too much.
Yeah, sure.
And I like the idea of Surface Go. It's very much like Windows 10 on ARM is today. I like the idea. I think the reality makes it impractical. But you also have to think, we know this because people have told us this. I mean, they obviously they looked at Snapdragon, and I think the reason they didn't go with it is that Intel paid them off. I mean, I really think that's why, because I was told it wasn't a payoff. I'm sorry, but I was told
Intel has ways of exerting pressure.
There was heavy lobbying there.
I think also the reason they went with Intel was the ARM experience isn't ready yet for the device.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And the types of people who would buy this, you're trying to expand your brand and you're going to give this thing to people that doesn't run all their stuff, you know, that is going to have those. It's just the wrong thing to do to people.
It is.
But the problem for Intel or for Microsoft with this particular device is that when you look at the thermal envelope of this device, it's going to be fanless and silent. It has to be clocked down to a certain place where it can kind of work and be that cool. This is the only thing they had that fit, you know? I have to think that Intel would have given them a really good deal on a Core M3 or whatever they're calling them these days, and that it just couldn't work. And
somebody who owns owned a laptop with the M3, no.
Yeah.
Don't.
No, I know. Of course. I mean, right. But, you know, this thing also has a tiny battery. Doesn't get great battery life. You know, it's we can't even make the argument for this that we would make for Qualcomm where, you know, well, at least the battery life is unbelievable. Mm. You know, it's like, well, it's slower than crap, but at least the battery life is terrible. You know, it's kind of a
no connectivity.
Kind of a tough marketing message.
Yeah. It's tough.
That was the other thing. About the ARM thing, I just wanted to quickly gloss over is the other thing that's kind of interesting in this market, this is something Ryan was telling me about, was the notion that, you know, Qualcomm is trying to get into the PC space, yes. But, you know, when you look at what they're doing in the scope of their wider market, I mean, obviously this mobile stuff is a bigger deal. And the one interesting area where they've kind of failed, even though they're on the majority of devices, is performance versus Apple, which has taken the same ARM core, Cortex cores, whatever it is, and then they go off and they do their own very significant enhancements to that chipset. That's something Qualcomm used to do. They don't do that anymore. There is some enhancement to it, but it's very minor these days. And I think that Qualcomm going off in these directions and is maybe going to have a heavier hand in tailoring their chips for specific markets, and that maybe they can regain some of the performance that they've lost to Apple, because it's I don't think anyone using a high-end Snapdragon, whatever, you know, 845 phone today would ever say, wow, you know, the performance is really terrible, generally speaking, because it's not, especially out of the box. I mean, they're really fast.
No, they're great for phones. Yeah. It's just that that's a different environment.
Look at the benchmarks compared to what Apple is doing. You can only come to one of two conclusions. Either A, Apple is tailoring the performance envelope of their chipsets to meet those, you know, benchmarks, or they're just doing a better job. And either way, ARM, generally, Qualcomm doesn't look good by that comparison. And I think they want to close the gap there because Microsoft isn't the only one who is trying to bring this, you know, classic desktop system to a mobile platform. Or Apple's rumored to be doing something very similar. And again, Apple, like Microsoft, has a rich history, and before that, Next, of tailoring their operating system, their platform, to different hardware platforms, right? You know, when they introduced that Intel thing, whatever year that was, 2008, 2009, they had actually been compiling on Intel for the whole time. That was, you know, they made it look like they turned it around in like 6 months. They had been working on that whole time. They have their own A-series chips. You know, being able to move the Mac to that is, I don't want to say it's an inconsequential feat. I mean, it's an incredible thing, but there's every reason to believe they'll actually do a better job of it just because they've been, it's their chip and they've been working on this
time. And I've been told many times by hardware engineers that one of the advantages Apple has is they're designing a chip for their hardware and operating system. They control the whole stack. You know, ARM and Qualcomm are designing it for a much more general, you know, they don't, it's a variety of use cases.
It's the PC world. Right. And, you know, Android is duplicating it. Do you want the most tightly integrated ecosystem, or do you want choice?
Apple, since almost day one, hasn't had to put any code to support Flash into its hardware. Yep. So they were able to, there were things they could take out of the processors because they would never be needed. And I think
this is always
considerable amount of stuff like that.
It's always been the case, right? So in the 1990s, I worked for a startup in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I used to go out to San Francisco all the time. And I'd meet this guy's kind of douchey Apple friends all the time. And they were always like, Apple, Apple, Apple. You know, it was terrible. And so we were at a party one night, and these two Apple goons are talking about how great Apple is. And they literally said something to the effect of, oh, well, Apple is way better engineers than Microsoft, you know. And I said, I'm sorry, let me step into this conversation. You're nuts, and I can prove it.
First now of all, you have Apple my attention.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Let me just put a stop to this stupid thing. Apple makes 6 different computers. They control the whole thing.
Right.
Yep. The thing better boot up every day and work. So let me tell you something. Windows boots up and works on some millions of combinations of hardware every single day. People get work done. The world runs in Windows. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
Obviously, when Microsoft has better engineers than Apple. Obviously. Obvious. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. Obvious. We created a closed ecosystem. Look, our 3 computers run fine. Yeah, congratulations. You know? And look, the Microsoft side of it, the PC side, and now the Android side. Yeah, are there downsizes? Obviously. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an advantage. All right. Have we done the good news, bad news, and the better news? Have we done all 3?
Yes. The good news is the 850 is going to be better. And the better news is the 1000 is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And those aren't all that far off, according to the roadmap.
I know.
Yeah.
No. I just want then to be now.
I can see your benchmarks, and and I will raise you a speed test. How about that? This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by... completely coincidentally, I'm not kidding, the Qualcomm Snapdragon. Paul didn't know until I told him. Here's a question. Would you like faster data speeds in your phone? Well, who wouldn't? Everybody wants more speed. Waiting's annoying. I don't care if it's in line. I don't care if it's in traffic. If you've got one bar of signal and it's taking forever to finish downloading your music playlist, that's not fast enough. But there is a way to get faster data speeds. It turns out all you need is the right phone. So Qualcomm and Ookla, you know Ookla, they do speedtest.net. That's the website. In fact, the app as well that people do their speed tests on. They have over 1 million real-world results on speed test on the app from AT&T and T-Mobile in Q2. They analyzed them and found that Android phones, get this, with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm Technologies, had up to 192% faster data speeds than non-Android phones with those Intel modems. That's almost twice as fast. 192%. And the Snapdragon 845 mobile platform is engineered with powerful features that allow you to do a lot more with your phone. Immersive XR experiences. The third generation Qualcomm Hexagon 685 DSP supports sophisticated on-device AI processing, delivering richer camera. If you're wondering why your camera is so good, that little bitty sensor in there, you could thank the processor. Voice, XR, and gaming experiences. They've also got advanced vault-like security. The new Qualcomm Secure Processing Unit is engineered to help protect personal data. Biometrics used for authentication can be stored in isolation, keeping precious data out of prying eyes. And as we all know, it's very energy efficient, engineered for all-day battery life, and capable of up to 50% charge in only 15 minutes. I shouldn't really have to tell you this. You know the data sheet. Check it all out for yourself at Qualcomm, Qualcomm.com/twit. And then, when it's time to upgrade your phone, upgrade your data speeds with a phone powered by Snapdragon 845. Qualcomm.com/twit. By the way, it doesn't have to cost a lot. I just saw the new Xiaomi. What do they call it? The Poco phone? It's got a crazy name.
I know.
$845. It's under $300. Flagship in every respect. 4,000 milliamp hour battery. Yeah. You don't have to spend a lot to get $845 to get all that speed, all that battery life. And so I take your benchmarks and I raise you. There you go. 192%.
Well, they also, we didn't have this in the notes, but off the top of my head, I don't know how this was revealed, but the Snapdragon 855, which would be the next chip for phones, I think was it 5 or 7? I guess 7 nanometer.
Yeah, they said 7. Yeah.
5G capable.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it never stops.
Yeah. I really think it's very interesting. Man, if I were Intel, I'd be very worried. Well, I think they are.
I think Intel is very. Yeah. I think they are.
Yeah.
And right now they're doing what they, they have this thing they can do, and it's all kind of high end, but it's impressive, and it's, you know, it's newsworthy. But they, this is, there's a real, there's this giant mainstream part that's underneath all that. I think that's where they're vulnerable.
And then there's servers, right? I mean, is ARM going into servers? Because by the way, that's where the Spectre meltdown and foreshadow all these
and
all
the
these,
literal meltdown,
all of these speculative execution flaws really hit you where you have multiple users on the same processor, i.e., servers.
Well, it's also an area where the kind of the unique, well, I don't know, unique, but the design of ARM chips, where they have kind of little cores and big cores and the huge energy efficiencies, plays a huge role.
Yeah.
Yeah, because servers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean,
it kind of went back and forth, though, didn't it, about ARM and servers? Like, it is in some servers, but then it was supposed to, they were supposed to be doing this huge thing with ARM on servers, and then it hasn't materialized yet. And some people said they were getting out of the market, and then they said, no, we're not. Huh. And
I don't know.
I know competition is a good thing. And,
it is.
And unfortunately, AMD's probably wondering, geez, maybe we shouldn't have done that x86 deal with the devil after all. Because I have to think, they say they're not susceptible to foreshadow, but they said they weren't susceptible to Scepter.
Oh,
right.
AMD, let me introduce you to a little world called, a word called hubris and karma.
Yeah. Well, I just
be careful.
I think all of them, including ARM, use speculative execution, but I don't know.
AMD has been kind of left out of this conversation. It's weird because in the last year and a half or so, they've done a really good job reestablishing themselves
Look at this
as a mainstream alternative to Intel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like Intel, I don't sense that there's any innovation going on there to address the needs of this kind of mobile cloud world, you know? They've kind of, you could make this argument in certain areas they've caught up with Intel. Well, great. But Intel's screwed.
Right. Like they're catching up to the loser is not the best thing in the world.
Yeah. I mean, they're the winner. I mean, you know, for sure, but or a winner. But I think there's a soft belly there.
Yeah. Not to mention IoT. So it's so there's what's it? That's the other thing.
All these edge devices. Yeah. You know, it's like Intel has the same problem that Windows has. It's very powerful, but it's also really complicated and it's big. You know, and even Microsoft, you know, when they looked at this Azure Sphere thing, you know, they had to go with something that was even more componentized and could be smaller than Windows could be, because we have Windows IoT Core and Windows whatever embedded. Those systems are too big and heavy for this Azure Sphere platform. This is one of the, this is why we see Linux in a lot of data center things. And I think this is why Intel could have a problem on the hardware side across the board, from mainstream computing to this new edge computing kind of notion and into the data center as well.
And then there's Redstone.
Oh yeah, that thing.
It never goes away.
Redstone 5. Somebody called the radio show and said that he had some programs like Total Recorder and something else that 1803 broke. And so he was deferring 1803. And I said, well, maybe 1809, maybe just skip to 1809.
And the next one solves all of the problems, so absolutely.
Will it?
No, not really.
Is that foolish to even...
That's always the thought.
To
right?
hope.
The
futility of hope.
What else? How else could we go day to day?
I know, you're right.
I know.
You know?
You're right. So last week you opined that perhaps we'd seen the last version.
Well, I opined was that the product was feature complete. I would say that the evidence is building to that notion. We've had actually two builds since then. We had one Thursday or Friday, I don't remember, and then one yesterday. Yeah, Tuesday, which is kind of typical. Mm-hmm. Both of them have no new features. So now there's been four builds with no new features. It's just a matter of timing.
Yeah, a lot of people I saw were like, and it's officially known as 1809. No kidding. It's always been known as 1809.
I don't know. I don't know where that is. Because some dialogue box, you know, finally matched the actual version.
Right. It doesn't say 1803 in the watermark. Now it says 1809. So people are like, that's the official name. I'm like, guys, we knew they were going to do this. Like, that's not a surprise.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah. But I think they are done. I don't know which build will be RTM, which we're not supposed to say.
Well, there were no bills that will be RTM, Mary Jo. You know that. Windows is a service.
Oh, I know. I know that.
It tells you that when you install it.
That's right.
I think that's the most objectionable thing that Windows 10 does today. When you install it, it says, just between the two of us, Windows is a service. No, it isn't. You know, it's just like, I don't know. Something about that bugs me.
Yeah. But yeah, there's nothing much to say about Redstone 5 now or Server 2019. It's like they're just getting more and more fixes. The countdown.
They added the big news this past week was they added an icon to the desktop. apparently, the ways they're advertising your phone are not enough. So they're going to let you find it that way. Neat. I guess. I assume it will be next to the Edge icon, which is also in the desktop now for some reason.
Bin. Isn't that still there?
Yeah. But you can delete those, right? You can.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, it's just they really want you to use this thing. And I appreciate this. I think this is kind of key to the future of the platform, that if they can get enough people to kind of need or want this cross-device integration between their mobile phone and their computer, that will really help them a lot. And, you know, we'll see. But it's a good idea.
It's a good idea.
Lots of good ideas.
Yeah. Do you want... I mean, seeing all these other... How many of these do you want to...
We should talk about sticky notes.
You do want to talk about sticky notes.
We should talk about that.
Okay. It's coming to mobile.
Well, I want to be clear about it, because when I was in Berlin, I revealed that on this show.
You did.
And then the guys working on this have started releasing all this information on Twitter for some reason about new features that are coming in the next version of sticky notes. The one thing they haven't mentioned is that it's coming to mobile, but it is coming to mobile. And a lot of this cross-device stuff that they're going to be doing is mobile is the reason, right? That you create a sticky note on your computer and it's going to appear on your mobile device. This is part of that strategy I just talked about. So if you want to use sticky notes to do something simple like, grocery list or whatever, you might type that on your computer because you're working and you're thinking about this stuff. And then later on when you just open your phone and there it is. I mean, I know this is a crazy unique feature that no one's ever used before, but it makes sense, right? It's a good idea.
That is the one they haven't disclosed. So far they've talked about things like there'll be like a light black theme, like charcoal colored sticky notes.
Okay, they
talked about adding more.
In other words.
Woo, you want that.
Actually, within the scope of what sticky notes is, this does seem like a pretty good update.
No, it does. And the ability to tuck away your sticky notes, hide them, and then refine them using search. The syncing across all your Windows devices. They said it'll sync across your Windows devices, but they never said and iOS and Android.
I think they want this to be a big reveal. I am dead set on ruining that for them. It's coming to mobile. I want to be really clear about that.
You've done that already, you party pooper.
You ruined it.
Well, these guys from Microsoft are getting on Twitter. They're like, oh, we got all this big stuff to announce. I can't wait to say it. I'm like, let me say it for you. It's coming to mobile.
And so it's coming. The way it's going to show up is in the skip ahead next version, not Redstone 5. So all these things we're saying aren't Redstone 5 features. They're, I can never remember how to say this, 19.
I know, right? This is exactly, thank you. I stumble over it every time. I have to stop, think, say it.
In other words, Redstone 6.
Make sure I said it right.
Yeah,
you know, it's not good.
I know.
It's like, you go in and you're like, sorry, Bob, we just got the results back and you have cancer. Oh, no, I mean, you don't have cancer. you got to get it right the first time.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You don't have cancer. Thought you had cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. So sticky notes. Well, you got a lot of mileage out of that. That's good.
But you know what? The thing to know, like people go, oh, sticky notes, who uses that? A lot of people use it. And the way they use it is as like another to-do tool, right? So that's why they're doing this. They're doing stuff with Wunderlist and they're doing stuff with to-do and all that. Right.
By the way, I mean, so they already have one or more to-do type solutions. This can be used for notes. Microsoft has a little product called OneNote. So if it's too heavyweight, successful enough.
Stickies are light.
I know, but what's
Notepad?
OneNote has Quick Notes, right? It could be like the front end to OneNote. If Sticky Notes is popular enough, are they going to rename OneNote to Sticky Notes Pro.
Sticky Notes Pro.
Don't give them any ideas, please.
I'm going to ruin this product for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
What else under Redstone 5? Do we care about any of those other things?
One of Windows 10's nonsense features stopped working.
And nobody noticed.
And nobody. What if
this happened over the weekend? Brad, what was it? Brad is. You think I'm bad? Brad has a really vindictive streak, which I enjoy quite a bit. And he texted me and Mahdi over the weekend, and he was like, you could hear him laughing over Skype. Like, this Microsoft service for the 3D stuff, the Remix 3D thing, went down, and nobody noticed it. Like, all they like no one from Microsoft noticed it. And
Is that actually what happened? Because then I read his update, and it seemed like instead of going down, it was getting marked as like malware, right?
Yeah.
Like their site being like misidentified.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the type of thing you can easily fix on the website. And I think I guess the undercurrent here is this thing is used by so few people that it just didn't ring any alarm bells anywhere. Like, it's just, and this is kind of my point about this stuff. Like, yeah, I'm sure there are people who love this stuff for sure. You should have your head examined, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. But the usage on this kind of thing is going to be pretty low, you know, compared to like Windows Mail or, you know, some other major platform feature. So I think that's what this highlights.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, with that reorg where Terry Myerson left, one of the things they did was they stopped doing the 3D for Everyone initiative. They've ceased work on that, and they've reorganized it. And like Chris Pratley, who was the big guy, one of the big people on Remix 3D, he's now working in the Office team instead. You know, Megan Saunders has a new job. I think she's working on Cortana now. So they really just aren't prioritizing that anymore. Like, the reorg just kind of made it clear, like, that's not what we're doing. We're, you know, the 3D stuff, we're still doing it with HoloLens and mixed reality and mixed reality headsets, but we're not doing this like for consumers thing we're doing for work.
So I think this is probably, you know, tied more generally to what one of the things I actually really do like about Satya Nadella and his version of Microsoft that we're dealing with now, which is that there seems to be this thing where you have to really justify your existence, right? And so with the 3D stuff in Windows and whatever those other things they did for a couple of years there, I feel like they had this window, so to speak, where you could, okay, let's play with this. Let's see if you can get consumers excited about Windows again. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And then Terry and the team, and, you know, they had things they had to do, like get Windows on this crazy update schedule so it could match up with the rest of what became Microsoft 365. I think that time's passed, you know, and whether it's specifically because Terry was laid off or whatever, and they changed the way that Windows is organized, you know, whatever. But I feel like this is a good example of how this system works, you know, that if this stuff doesn't make sense, we're not going to pour enormous resources at it anymore. Doesn't make sense for some giant chunk of Microsoft to be working on features in Windows that no one is ever going to use, or very few people use, I should say. Yeah. That those resources should be allocated accordingly to, you know, to what really is important, which is the nice thing about Windows 10 today.
You know what I like the best in Windows 1803 is the timeline feature. And now, something I like the least works with it.
I happen to like Twitter for Windows 10, Leo, but that's okay.
It's not that I don't like Twitter for Windows 10. I just don't like Twitter, period. I finally took my account private. I'm just going to stop.
Are you really?
Yeah. I have the same thing with relationship, I guess, with Twitter I do with Facebook, which is that I feel like it's turned me into a monster.
Actually, I do too now. I have deactivated Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, I struggle with this.
Like,
and
I just don't like how I feel, And they're
really it's Twitter just where good people go to be terrible.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah.
And I look at people like Elon Musk and I think if he just stopped tweeting.
Yeah, just there are a few other high profile people.
More than
tweeting.
A few.
more than a few. And
so I'm tooting. I don't tweet, I toot.
You too.
Well, it's,
you should go to the doctor for that.
you're using Mastodon.
No, man of your age.
I went back
normal,
to Mastodon. But. There's this, you know, Mastodon never kind of went away. It was this TweetDeck clone, and it's a federated thing and all that. It never really went away. And what I noticed is it's kind of been slowly growing ever since. As more and more people like me go, yeah, I'm kind of done with it.
I will say, I don't know, Mary Jo, if you've ever run into this, but you know, there are trolls on Twitter, and there are terrible people.
Really?
And then there, hold on, let's escalate a little bit. But then there's also this like actual terribleness, like real, like deep set level, yeah, personal threat kind of terrible stuff.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that's occurred over the past week or so, there's been these news reports about Twitter getting all kinds of complaints about different groups or people or whatever and doing absolutely nothing about it. And this is kind of an area where I've just like a really tiny little bit of personal experience with, because once or twice, three times or whatever it is, I've gone to Twitter and said, look, I was just personally threatened on your service. Mm-hmm. Here it is. It's very clear cut. Whatever. And you fill out the report. And every time they've come back and they said, I'm sorry, the person didn't violate terms of service.
Yes.
And I see this about much bigger people, you know, much bigger, awful, more terrible examples. And that's exactly, that's,
they don't care.
I think that's, they're really boilerplate. It's like, what exactly are your terms of service? Yeah. I other than nonsense.
They don't care.
It says clearly you can't do this thing that I reported and you are doing nothing about it.
I just want
to kind of makes it for a terrible,
up for a better world. And I feel like there's no question in my mind, Facebook is actually actively evil. And yes, and its management is actively evil. I mean, I've really come to that conclusion. I know I might be the only one, but that's my conclusion.
Oh, you know what? You're probably right. And I wonder how that might be tied to its dominance, because Microsoft was actively evil back in the late 90s, early 2000s. No, they were, right? Mary Jo, I think, would agree with this.
Yeah,
I mean,
they
were anti-competitive.
No, they liked being evil. They wanted to be evil. It was actually, like they took pride in it.
I miss them being competitive, but they acted in ways specifically that harmed their users on purpose so they could screw over competition, potential competition in many ways. And I just found that behavior to be horrible and hard to deal with. Now, it's almost 20 years later now, and a lot of people get up in arms about things like Google, like this location service thing, and oh my God, they're tracking my location in maps. Shocker. But I think Google and Apple and companies like that have the capacity for their bad behavior to impact so many more people, and makes it seem evil. Like Facebook, I think is in that place without a doubt. You know, where I don't know, maybe the behavior was originally not, if not benign, was just competitive, and now it's like, does anyone even think about this stuff anymore?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. I have a lot of problems with Twitter too, but for me, so far and to this point, the good is outweighing the bad in terms of being able to interact with users.
Right? And the chances for you seeing terrible things on Twitter are probably higher.
I block so many people. I'm pretty indiscriminate in blocking people if they say something that I'm just like, and block. You know, I'm just like, and we're done here.
I every day. I mean, not.
I don't respond because I'm like, I'm not getting in a flame war with you, and I'll just block you.
I literally just stopped reading.
The conversations are so, they're just
basic.
Ridiculous. You know?
Yeah, and it just it's designed that way. I mean, that's where I just kind of gave up on Twitter. It's literally designed to foster outrage. It's an outrage engine. It's programming, and so I just not going to deal. I don't want to be part of it.
No, that's
I don't want to support it.
Probably very healthy.
I should have stopped years ago,
and
I had the same kind of thing that you do, Mary Jo. Well, I get something out of it. There's some value to it. No, I'm just not going to support it.
Yeah. I mean, there may be a point where I say that. Like, I barely do anything on Facebook. I use Facebook to look at other people's sites, respond to invitations, look at pictures from my family, and that's it. I don't post anymore on Facebook. I'm done with that.
Last place besides tooting is Instagram, and I'm really debating whether I should. I do too. I like the pictures.
Really?
So I'm really debating whether I should even be there. Facebook. I don't want to support Facebook.
My guess is you will eventually get rid of that too. And I did the same thing. I kind of switched to Instagram. I say kind of because the truth is I don't publish a lot of like personal family photos and stuff there. But I post photos that I, you know, just of things, and it's fine. And if people want to see them, it's cool. But, you know, as more people start following you on Instagram, you see the kind of same silliness you see on Twitter or elsewhere. And it's like, I look at some of the things that people write in response to some of my photos, and it's like, guys, like, I don't even understand the mentality of the, you know.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. And I think exposing myself to people might not be the greatest approach. You know, I mean, I gotta, you know, it's almost like, I mean, I'm a writer, right? And you are a writer, and and I'm not necessarily comfortable with this kind of interaction. You know, it's something that I just kind of fell into, and then looking back at it, I'm like, what? This has got to be impacting my blood pressure.
That's really it. Yeah,
it has to be.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you'll just say, Paul will just say to me, tell me to step away from Twitter right now because I'm about to lose it.
I don't want to be in that kind of situation.
Yeah, right.
This is not right. Exactly. I already have
step
children
away from
and a dog
Twitter.
I can beat up. I don't need, I'm just kidding. But
oh, look, I just checkmarked in private account Instagram. It said, no, business accounts can't be private.
Oh, really? But you have a personal account there, don't you?
Well, I guess at some point I must have indicated that it was.
Oh,
I don't know. Or I'm a public figure. I don't know.
Oh, that could be it.
I don't know. I mean, I see you and I see Lisa on Instagram, and I like that stuff. And I kind of understand, you know, why people might. You know, I on Instagram, you can at least, you have to do it on a post by post basis, but you can kind of say, I'm not going to allow comments on this thing.
Yeah.
I kind of wish, in some ways, I could just do that. You know, and I'm sure the engagement would be a lot lower. I'm sure it would, right? I think I'm sure that's the point. But this struggle is never going to end.
Yeah.
No. It's true.
I'm sorry, I derailed the conversation. Back we go. Let's actually take
Twitter,
a break.
That stinking hellhole of an app was updated on Windows 10.
Oh, yeah.
It supports timeline and video upload. And it is, remember, based on the PWA version of the app, which I really like. The rest of it is a post-apocalyptic hellscape. So, but it does support timeline.
Our show today brought to you by the one social network I do still use, WordPress.com. It's actually a better experience, really, if you own your own site on the internet. If you're a business, I would say, sure, it's good to have a Twitter account, a Facebook account. Yeah, that's fine. Instagram account. But you still need your own website, and all of those should link back to that, shouldn't they? WordPress.com makes it easy. You don't have to be a technical wizard. I couldn't do it. I hosted my own WordPress account for many years. In fact, I first started using WordPress back in the beginning when they first came out, running on my own server. But I realized pretty quickly that I was spending more time tweaking and messing with the server and having fun with it than I was blogging. So I went to WordPress.com. They do the hosting. They do the security. They do the software updates. You don't have to do any of that. You focus on your site. It's really a relief. Plus, it is a community. If you go to the WordPress.com front page, they promote people's blogs. It's a really nice community of WordPress users. It's an online hub. It's also a great place to call your own because it really is your own. And room to grow as you aim higher. For instance, you want to add e-commerce? No problem. WordPress.com has a complete suite of tools. Everything from a simple buy button. It's very effective. Buy this to a complete online store. They can do it all. You grow your audience and reach new customers because they have built-in search engine optimization to help you rank higher. They have social media features like social linking so that your customers, your readers, your friends will share your site to their Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And you get more that way. You get more publicity that way. Marketing tools to help you get the word out. It's a great way to build your business. Or your personal brand. And I don't want to downplay that. Everybody, even if you're not a business, you're just an individual. I tell my kids this. I've given lectures at high schools. You should create a website at WordPress.com so that you, when somebody searches for your name, they find you. That you control your reputation on the internet. And you can do it with confidence, even if you say, well, I don't understand this. Don't worry. They have 24/7 help. That's really great. Their support team is the best in the world. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. Okay? Now, come on. No wonder 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Right now, get 15% off any new plan purchase. It's even more affordable if and only if you go to WordPress.com/windows. Help us out here. WordPress.com/windows. You'll be helping yourself out too with 15% off and the best place to host your site. So many people I know now use WordPress.com. It's just the best. WordPress.com/windows. We thank them for making Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley possible. All right. Now we get back to the show, and we're going to talk about Microsoft Office.
Yeah, so this is interesting and not surprising in a way. Microsoft posted in the Office 365 Message Center that as of mid-September, the Office 365 public roadmap will become the Microsoft 365 roadmap. See how everything they're doing now, it's not anymore just about Windows or just about Office or just about enterprise mobility and security. They talk about this like it's one thing, even though it's not really one thing. I mean, you can buy this thing called Microsoft 365, which is a bundle of those three things, but it's not like actually a separate entity, which is how they're Mary treating Jo, it now.
Windows 10 as a service.
That's
just
it,
say
buddy.
Say it.
Just say it. Yeah, so from now on, starting in mid-September, instead of seeing the Office 365 roadmap, you know, which lists things like product features that are rolling out, things that are in development, things that they've canceled, you're now going to see that for Microsoft 365. So that means Windows 10 Enterprise, EMS, and some pieces of Azure, as well as Office 365, will all be in this giant combined roadmap. I'm interested to see what this looks like because I feel like these separate roadmaps are pretty big already. They don't cover every single feature that Microsoft is adding to these products, but they're fairly comprehensive and lengthy and detailed. So when you add all of these things into one giant roadmap, I'm curious what that's going to look like. Don't tell me it's going to be fluent. I don't care whether it's fluent or not. I just hope it's easy to read and simple to find a feature, you know, like, is this rolling out? Has it already rolled out? That's my goal. I would assume they're doing this in mid-September because it'll be right before Ignite. And at Ignite, their big show for IT pros in Orlando, they're going to be talking a lot about Microsoft 365 and EMS and a lot of Windows 10 also. So, yep. We're going to hear about all that.
Now, I have to point something out.
Yes.
About a year ago, I was going to go on a trip to Galapagos, and I wanted a way to post all my pictures. Mm-hmm. And I had seen your beautiful sway about Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to do that. And I posted. I did. I made a very nice sway. It had maps. It had animation. Mm-hmm. It had all the images. Now, I'm thinking I'm about to go on another vacation. This would be a great time to think about where I'm going to put my photos and how I'm going to do it. And I go and I try and I sway, like, what happened?
Leo.
Is sway gone?
Let me turn that frown upside down. Because.
That's not really your specialty, Paul, but go ahead.
It's not really.
Let's try it. I can do this. No, I feel like, I don't think sway is going away. The original plan for sway was that they were going to have a web app and then mobile apps for each platform, which at the time included Windows Phone. They did eventually ship a version for Windows 10, which actually I expect to go away. I think what they're doing here is doing the PWA model, where it's going to be the web. Because one thing that's always been the case is that the mobile version of the site, the web version of the site, has always worked on mobile too, and so it's still going to be there. The other thing is, though, could sway be going away? I mean, yeah, maybe that is part of the deal. I'm sure the usage is pretty low, but sway is interesting on a number of levels. I think the two I'd like to point out is just that A, it's kind of the new Microsoft way of doing things, right? Although they did add it to Office 365, right? But instead of having like these giant monolithic suites of apps that had everything and did everything, you know, Sway is kind of the new mobile app way of doing things. It does one thing. It's kind of a cute little solution in and of itself. And, it's kind of a modern alternative to PowerPoint, if you will, right? It's not exact, I realize. But the idea is you have this information. It could be multimedia. It could just be text. You want to present it to others in some way. What might that look like today in the 2000s, whatever you call these years, compared to like the late 80s when PowerPoint was invented and the end game was always like a slide that went into a projector? You know, it's just a different way of doing things. So I think Microsoft is still trying to feel through that stuff. But the second half of it is that the core feature to Sway, I think, is that remix button, right? That's the cool thing, that it took away the things that were hard for you as a normal person, like the design, the fonts and all that, the layout and all that. And you could kind of hit remix over and over again and go through different presentations. And then when you found one you liked, you know, it was designed for you. It was kind of nice. That technology has come to Windows 10. It's part of the Photos app now, and they have that remix feature where you can kind of hit remix on a what is probably a photo slideshow. You could have small videos and so forth. And it's kind of the same type of thing, right? That the notion is that I have this thing I want to share with other people, but I want it to be presented in a nice, attractive looking way, but I'm not a graphic designer. So, you know, if Sway goes away, and I hope it doesn't, in some ways the technology will kind of live on. If that makes sense.
I always liked using the web version of it better than the app version anyway.
So they're killing the iOS app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
the service is staying alive.
Okay.
It's not like Sway is going away. It's Sway the app. And they never even came out with Sway for Android. They never did that.
Right. No, I mean, I'm going to mix up the dates, but I distinctly remember being in San Francisco and going to their field office and seeing a demo of this before it shipped, and it was on the web and it was on iOS at the time. But I think when they first shipped, it was just web first and then, you know, iOS. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember if they ever came out with it on Windows Phone. Like I said, they did come out with it on mm-hmm. Windows 10. I think there are markets where this thing could be very useful. Mm-hmm. Education is probably a high point for these guys. Because the collaboration stuff.
Justin Lawless, who's listening, says internal staff newsletters, Sway is great.
Yeah.
If you didn't worry if it'd be around in a couple of years, it would be fine.
Yeah.
Which is great for a staff newsletter or school project. It's,
okay. So I think to put this into the Microsoft area, I guess the fear here is that this will become PhotoSynth, right? That it was this awesome thing that was really unique. It had a dedicated website. It was super free. Then they got rid of the app. And then over time, they got rid of the site. And that meant all the things you created were gone. Mm-hmm. Right?
But now it's back. PhotoSynth is back in Pix on iOS. Like they brought the capability back. But it's not like the actual PhotoSynth app. It's like they added PhotoSynth capabilities to Pix, I believe.
Yeah, so they added Remix capabilities to Photos. You know, it's
right. Yeah.
I don't know. I like the idea. I mean, if you look at an app like PowerPoint, it's big, it's heavy, it does all kinds of stuff. If you're a kid in school, it might be a little too much. And so, you know, they have the mobile version of the app, which is probably pretty good. Then they have this, which may be more along the lines of the way that, you know, kids today think. And that, I think that was the theory. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
Let's rethink this in a more modern sense. I still think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I loved it because I never could figure out PowerPoint. I only use PowerPoint once or twice a year, and I never remembered where things were that I needed to make a slideshow.
Yeah.
So Sway was good. It was easy. Yeah.
There was a guy from Microsoft one time who I don't remember this exact. I don't even remember what the topic was, but he actually presented to me and used the default black and white PowerPoint.
No. You know? Oh, no.
And so I asked him about it, and he goes, I don't know how to use this thing. I said, you know what? Good for you. I'm like,
pretense. Just, I'm using
good.
The basic
You have
template.
An expertise.
Here's it's the information.
I mean, God, even in the late 90s, I remember we had this phrase, like I worked for a community college, and the phrase was, those who don't know how to do something do PowerPoint.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're kind of dressing up your ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's make it pretty. It's way,
maybe they won't notice.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they will.
Is he talking nonsense? It's really pretty.
I'm terrible at PowerPoint. Yeah. I'm the worst.
That's something, you know, that's something to celebrate. Right on, you know. Keep up the good work, Mary Jo.
I'm really bad.
That's good.
That means you're focusing on something important.
Yeah. I just don't want to rely on a company's back end to live forever. Even with PowerPoint, you can create a PDF
I don't know how Sway handles that. Is it possible? I know you can export a Sway. I mean, I wonder, can you just put it on any web?
PDF.
So then that's fine. And maybe they'll offer a way for that. All you need to do, first you install the front page web extensions. And then it has to be on
I still have somebody. I have them on a floppy somewhere, I think. Yeah.
The VTI bin folder structure has to be exact. I don't know.
You need to be something like Sway that you could self-host.
Yeah, they call it WordPress.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You can do many other things. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a little more work than Sway was. Sway does a lot for you. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. What else? Skype, the endless, the gift that keeps on giving, the never-ending saga of Skype.
How the brokenness can be secure.
Well, this is a good Skype story, actually. So Skype Consumer finally has the ability to do encrypted end-to-end conversations. You know, like, you always heard Skype was encrypted, but it was never the full end-to-end encryption. It was a different kind of encryption that they had called 256-bit AES encryption. But now, as we heard in January when they said that this was in testing, they have enabled this for all, almost all Skype consumer users. So it works on Windows Desktop, iOS, Mac, Android, and Linux. Where it doesn't work is in the store app. The Skype UWP store app does not have this. And
so is this
Microsoft will not say
secure?
When.
No.
This conversation is not secure.
Anybody?
Wait, people could be listening to this?
Yes, people could be listening to this.
We need to fix
God.
This.
Hello, NSA. How you doing?
Yep. Hello, Russia.
It's good, though. Right now, it's for one-on-one conversations, audio, video. You can also have your downloaded photos and images encrypted. The whole thing from the beginning to the end of the conversation is encrypted in a single session. And they're going to be adding more features to this over time, but at least it did come out. I remember we heard about it in January. I'm like, yeah, whatever did happen to that thing? So it is now
that
out.
Thing. Whatever happened to that thing?
Whatever happened to that thing? You know, Skype, it's like kind of hard to keep up with. Are we killing something now? Are we adding this? Are we keeping it alive for a little longer? We're not really sure.
Well, what can you say? I think there's only one thing that could get this bitter taste out of my mouth. And it's not a mint julep. It's a little Xbox fun.
I always say this. True in this case. Yeah. This is going to be quick. It's like when you get a needle at a doctor. You're going to feel a slight bit of pain, and then it will be fine.
It's just a little prick. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, this is, so three things happening in the world of Xbox. Microsoft is at Gamescom this week. A number of announcements. There's new console bundles. There's some new customization capabilities for the controllers. It was Xbox Master Chief Collection is coming to Xbox Game Pass, which is cool, in September. And then Microsoft announced an Xbox Game Pass app on mobile. I was kind of confused by this. Like, what would be the point of this app? And I got to tell you, after investigating it, I have no idea. It appears...
good investigation, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
Well done.
All right, well, listen. Like, this isn't 60 minutes, Leo. I did like 6 seconds of research.
I don't understand this at all.
Wait, there's an old man standing at the door. He wants to talk to you. What it appears to do is let you browse the Xbox Game Pass collection, which is cool, 100-plus games. You can see the Xbox Game Pass games that you have added to your collection. Okay. And that's it. And I don't understand why that wouldn't just be part of the Xbox app on mobile. I don't quite understand it. In fact, my very first feeling about this was, oh, what if they're bringing it to mobile? What if there will be mobile Xbox Game Pass games? And that's not what this is. So I don't know. I know that Microsoft has planned a major revamp of the core Xbox app, both on Windows 10 and on mobile. We haven't seen that yet. That might be something that appears in the next version of Windows, the one after that. I don't know. This is apparently separate from that, so that's kind of goofy, but there it is. PUBG, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, has been available in preview since, I don't even know, December, maybe last year? Long time, 9 months. And it's they even sell console bundles with this thing included on it, even though it's not in like shipping form. And the good news is, after 9 months of improvements, and they've added a map and a game mode, apparently it's exiting preview. I don't believe this actually solves any of the problems with the game, which include rampant performance issues, but I guess they're done testing it. So there you go. So that's coming. And then finally, Minecraft Education. I just put this under Xbox. It's not really an Xbox topic, but Microsoft announced this past week that they're bringing it to the iPad. And my initial reaction to that was, I thought that was on the iPad, but I guess it wasn't. So it is coming to the iPad, and I think that is happening in September as well.
Excellent. I really, they put the, we were talking, remember the last time we talked about Minecraft for Education, I was all bummed that you have to have an education to use it. But I was pleased to see that they're slowly migrating some of the education stuff over to Bedrock, including they just, they're going to migrate the chemistry.
I was going to ask you.
Chemistry set.
So they're going to bring, that's cool.
Yeah. So you have to know that, though, and then go in the settings and turn off, there's a turn on education. I think there's an education checkbox. So
if you're using,
yeah, if you're using, I don't think it's in Pocket Minecraft, but eventually everything will be Bedrock, the Java version. So if you're using the Java version, look in your settings for an education checkbox, and then you can make water and stuff. I think this is
that's so cool. Let's do this right now because it's so cool.
Yeah, see if you can do it. I don't know if it's been enabled yet. I'll try to find my the link that I saw that on.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I'd love to see more of these features because, you know, everybody loves Minecraft, and I do. I play a lot of it. And anything that can, yeah. And it's coming on iPad, you mentioned. Let me see.
Unlock.
They call it the Compound Creator. The Chemistry Resource Pack, which was announced for schools in January and uses game-based learning to introduce chemistry concepts. This is from GeekWire. It features a full periodic table of the elements and a compounding table, much like the crafting table you're used to. Okay, it's not there yet. Oh, maybe it was. This summer, consumer Minecraft players on Windows 10 PC and the Xbox console were given access to the Chemistry Resource Pack. So, in the game, go to... Oh, you got to do it in Create New World. It actually is part of creating a new world.
Okay, so you
have to go to the Create New World option under the Cheats menu, turn on Education.
Funny.
So it's cheating. That's a smart way to get kids to get into it. Oh, it's cheating? I'm doing it, man.
I'm in.
So create a new world. This works on Xbox as well. And then turn on cheats, and then there's an education cheat. So that actually is really, really cool. I'm really pleased. You see it? Mm-hmm. Nice. I'm going to create a new world. So I guess that you have to create a new world with chemistry in it, basically.
Okay. Yeah. You can't add chemistry.
You can't add chemistry.
Existing worlds. Sorry, that's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, can't put chemistry in an existing world. Oh, that's so sweet. And I presume that that's an indicator, especially if people show some interest, that there will be that more will be added in time. Well, I just extended your Xbox segment a little bit.
Yep. That's
okay. Sorry. Sorry. Activate cheats. Okay. But you verified it, because I don't.
It's there. I didn't do it.
But didn't do it, yeah. Nice. All right, we can take a little break and come back with your back of the book tips. Oh, wait a minute. One more thing.
Oh, yeah. Right. We should talk about the glass.
Glass is here. And so Sirachi. I thought you had the Sirachi controls on.
No. I had him on, and he started destroying the door.
Oh, it does happen. Oh, he's so pretty. Is. You know, he is a beautiful cat. I love his coloring. He's huge. He's actually bigger than you are. Be careful.
It turns out it's a bobcat.
I found him on a hike.
Yeah. I just brought him home.
I got him like one year ago, almost exactly. He made his debut on Windows Weekly the first day he was here.
Yes, he made it quite a splash, as I remember.
Oh, yes, he did.
So let's talk about the glass thermostat, because we were all raving over this. It's very pretty.
It's really pretty. So this is the glass thermostat is from Johnson Controls. They announced it a year ago, almost exactly, and they showed it. It was Cortana powered, based on Windows 10 IoT inside. We were supposed to get the pre-order for it in March. It just happened this past week, so now you can get a pre-order, and it's going to ship in two more days, like around August 24th, I believe. The big surprise here, though, with this smart thermostat is it also works with Amazon and Google Assistant. That wasn't part of the original announcement.
Nope.
Sirachi wants to play now. So that was an addition at some point to this so that it can work with all of the assistants now and not just Cortana. So that makes it a little less kind of special for Cortana, and a little more useful for potential buyers because they're more likely to have or a Google Assistant. So yeah, it's $319, I believe, and available in a couple days.
Nice.
Are you going to get one?
And now,
no.
Am I going to get one?
Hmm. Too expensive.
Hey, you, Paul? Yeah, it's expensive.
No,
too expensive. You know, the other reason is when you install your own thermostat, there's a complication that comes up.
Yep.
What?
Well, so there's the standard wires, and then there's one extra wire that you may or may not have.
Right.
Right? What's the name of it? I can't remember.
We have one thermostat that has it and one that doesn't. And so what we have literally is like the old analog dial.
Right.
That everyone has or has had.
The common wire.
Upstairs, we have something that looks like a 7-inch Android tablet.
Right. So some thermostats have a common wire. Some don't. Mm. And the common wire, I think, is power. So if you don't have a common wire, then you have to have batteries. But and if you don't have a common wire and a thermostat needs a common wire, which a lot of the smart ones do, then you have to run a common wire from your furnace.
You'll have to get an electrician.
Oh, wow.
And that's no fun at all.
No.
So we had, I had Nest thermostats in my old place. And when we moved, I started to install it. And then I realized, oh, crap, I have to run a common wire.
You can't power them.
Yeah. So
we have the added complexity of we have AC on the thermostats, but every room has its own heat control because it's electric.
That's complicated.
And that is it's a nightmare is what it is. It basically means doing a smart anything. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. For a thermostat.
Right. I may be getting this wrong, but that's something to check before you run out and buy one of these thermostats is, A, whether you have a common wire, and B, whether the thermostat, I don't know if the glass requires it or not, requires
it. Oh, it's got to. It has to.
Thermostats, I'm pretty sure that if you don't have a common wire, you're going to have a battery.
Yeah, that's there's no way this thing runs off a battery. No, right? I mean, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's Windows. The thing would be dying every week.
Well, that's true, probably. Glass... common wire. I'm just going to Google it, right? Installing the C-wire adapter. So they do have a C-wire adapter, which is what you kind of want.
What you need is a 240-volt connector like you use on your dryer. I mean.
You don't mind putting a NEMA 50 in there, do you? Because I think you're going to need that. Right.
Why did the lights in the neighborhood... I plugged in my smart thermometer.
You're going to be able, if you want to see this, by the way, Microsoft is going to have it in the Microsoft brick and mortar U.S. stores and in the Microsoft online store sometime soon.
Where did I see this in person? I think it was at CES.
You did?
And it is. Yeah. And they had it on like a little fake brick wall or whatever. And it, you know, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful device.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It really
is. Yeah.
It looks
amazing. I've seen the video of it. It really is sweet.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those one-way mirror things, right? You can kind of see.
Yeah. Well, you know, because it's glass, hence the name, you know, if you, whatever the style of your wall and color of your wall is, it kind of comes through. So it's like a heads up display with the temperature or whatever is just kind of hovering there in front of the wall. It's really nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me correct myself. Well, I don't know if the Bedrock edition is what was the Pocket edition. It's not the Java version.
Yeah, right.
But
in other words, it's the new,
it's the new unified code new base. Form. Yeah, unified new code base. Yeah.
And it's not Pocket, it is correct.
Right. It's no longer Pocket. It's called Bedrock. The Chemistry Resource Pack won't be the last education feature to make transition to Bedrock or consumer Microsoft versions. But right now, consumer Microsoft players on Windows 10 PC and the Xbox console have the access. I don't know even what that means. I don't know what consumer means. It maybe is that Bedrock? I don't know.
I believe it doesn't. I assume it means the new modern clients across all platforms.
I bet you that's what it is.
The ones that are compatible with each other. We can do crossplay.
35 million licensees of Minecraft Education Edition in 115 countries. Pretty impressive.
It's even better than Sway.
Wow. All right. Woo! Break time and then back of the book, tips, tricks, beer. But first, a word. I got a tip for you if you're buying a home. A word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Let's take the anxiety out of this, the biggest purchase you'll ever make, your new house. But you don't want to be pressured into it. You don't want to be rushed into it. You want to take your time, and that's what Rocket Mortgage is all about, making it easy to get the loan so you can get the house you need, you want, you really love. Here's the deal. Rocket Mortgage is from Quicken Loans, number one lender in the country, number one in a couple of ways, number one in volume. They just did that in December, beating out the big bank, you know, that's been the number one lender until scandal erupted. They beat out the big bank by being customer centric, by being customer focused. That's the other way they're number one. Number one in customer satisfaction, according to JD Power, since I think 2010, for 8 years running. So they've completely dominated that 8 years in a row. And I think that you can say pretty certainly is what got them to the number one in volume as well. And you're going to love it. They created something called Rocket Mortgage. We've talked about this before. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. You do it from your computer, your laptop, your tablet, your phone. You don't have to put on airs. You definitely, what you definitely don't have to do is fill out a big, long application form and then go to the attic and get paperwork and find out where your pay stubs are and all that stuff. No, they do it all for you. What you do is you fill out a simple form on your phone. There's three steps that are involved now. It's based on income, assets, and credit. They show you the loans you qualify for. You pick the loan you want, the term you want, and all of that. Next step, this takes 24 hours. A loan officer goes over it, takes his big rubber stamp, it goes, and then you've got verified approval. Now, that it basically gives you the power of a cash buyer. Now you go in, the person who's selling the house says, oh, yeah, they got the letter from Quicken Loans, from Rocket Mortgage, that says they're approved. They got the loan. That's a big deal. But once that happens, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And this is where all the anxiety goes out. Because, and this wasn't necessary last year, but this year rates are going up, right? Interest rates are going up. And that sets the clock ticking, because if you take a little extra longer to find that perfect house and that interest rate goes up a quarter of a point, that could mean tens of thousands of dollars over the 30-year life of a loan. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big expense. You'd like to say, I don't want to have to worry about interest rates. And that's exactly what they do. They lock your rate for up to 90 days, up to 3 months while you shop. That's amazing. So you have up to 3 months to look for a house without worrying. The interest rates can't go up. They can only go down. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender, the best, the customer-centric mortgage lender. It's rocketmortgage.com/windows. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, and we thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage for their support of Windows Weekly. You support them, and they support us, and it's a virtuous circle of support.
Yes.
Yes. And now, without further foo-furrah, with no more kerfuffle, it is time for the back of the book and Paul's tip. What are you doing? Are you stroking your imaginary beard?
I'm thinking about the kerfuffle.
Kerfuffling. The tip of the week.
Yeah, so Google this past week or this week announced that the next version of their browser, Chrome 69, is coming out on September 4th. And then I think it's the 11th for Chrome OS. And this will be the version that finally brings that new material design refresh, the new look and feel that Mary Jo will never be able to see, to the browser. But as a reminder, you can actually enable that now. And I like this design so much. I actually used the canary versions of Chrome for a couple of months because it appears there first. And now if you're running Chrome 68, which is the current version, you can actually enable these features now. But I'm going to go a little past that because there's some other stuff you can enable too. There's two URLs you should know about as a Chrome user, especially if you're using PWAs. One is Chrome :\apps. That's where you get to all of the web apps you've installed into the browser, into Chrome OS. And so when I do things like Google Inbox, Google Calendar, Twitter, the PWA version, that's where those things are. So when I install Chrome on a new computer, I go to Chrome apps and then I, you know, just double click and then I pin them to the taskbar. But the other one is Chrome flags. So Chrome:// flags. And if you go in there now and you search for material, you will see a number of options you can enable in the browser today that will bring those material design refresh user interface elements into the browser. And so the key ones are UI layout for the browser's top, Chrome, and then material design in the rest of the browser's native UI. But there's just some other ones in there. And one of the things you might want to look for is that you'll have to search for something different. But there's an option called enable native notifications. So if you're running on Windows 10 in this case, what that means is that the Chrome-style notifications will turn into Windows 10-style notifications, which basically means they'll be black and will have some transparency to them. But if you like things to be semi-consistent, that might be something to enable as well. And then, you know, if you don't want to do this today, I mean, it's probably 2 weeks from now when they're actually going to make the switch. So this will become the default for everybody. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Chrome has had the same kind of trapezoidal, was that the name of that? The trapezoidal shape tabs, for example, and now they're kind of curved and more materially or more organic looking or whatever. I think it's a neat look. And I think it looks especially good in Windows 10. I think it looks a little more system native. And so if you do things like color the title bar in Windows, it will respect that. Now the top of the window will be that color as well. So it's just kind of a nice kind of a UI refresh they're finally doing. And like I said, I believe it's the first time ever.
You know, it's crazy. I never ever thought about or looked at the shape of a tab in Chrome until you just said that. And I'm like,
that's funny.
Trapezoidal. Oh. Yeah, I guess they are. Yeah.
Huh. Right? They're kind of, you know, that was the deal. They were, that was kind of sharp-edged, razor, nothing. Okay. So if you enable this feature, they'll be curved. They're kind of fun looking though. No? Okay. You'll get it eventually, I promise.
It's fluent design, Mary Jo.
It's yeah. One of these things, yeah.
Well, I will say this. I mean, for people of a Microsoft bent, you know, we used to have something called the Metro Design Language. And Microsoft did what they did, but it was kind of their flat UI. A big part of it was a sense of depth for UI elements. Chrome, or Google rather, kind of ran with that style of design when they came up with material design. Mm-hmm. And now they're refreshing it to be more attractive. If you like the Metro style thing, I think that Google has kind of improved on it and, you know, expanded on it. And that's kind of where they're at. And, you know, Apple did their own goofy thing with iOS where that became all super white and typography and flat. You know, that was a similar idea, I guess. The app pick of the week, this one's a little bit of a curveball, but I actually think this is going to benefit a bunch of people. And this is something I'm paying for going forward, because for someone like me in particular, this is super useful. So there's a company called Parallels that creates a virtualization solution for the Mac and has done so for many, many years, called Parallels Desktop. And they have Pro and work, you know, other higher end versions as well. Just this week, they shipped version 14 of that product, and it comes with all the stuff you'd expect, performance improvements. They do really neat Windows integration with the Mac, so that you basically and this is not new to this version, but you can run Windows apps on the Mac, and it's just the app. Like, you don't see Windows around it. It's just like the app. And for those people who need this to run a couple Windows apps, it's kind of a neat way to do it. I've always really, really liked Parallels Desktop. And over time, it became my preferred virtualization solution on the Mac. And then further still, I actually think it's better than Boot Camp, even from a performance perspective.
Have you used VMware's Fusion? Do you...
Yeah, but not in a
that's
while.
That's the competitor, I guess. That's
yeah, and they offer a similar kind of system where you can kind of blend the Windows apps into the...
Yeah, I go back and forth. Unfortunately, both of them want money for major updates.
Yeah, well, so the way they do things is you can subscribe to it, right? Because, you know, Parallels is a service. But you can buy it outright, and it's not super expensive. I want to say...
It's under $100.
Yeah, it's under $100. And then when a new version comes out, if you have one of the prior two versions, it's $50. And I think it's worth it.
If you use Windows, you use Windows, I guess. And you
well, the way I approach it is the way I handle Adobe Photoshop Elements, right? So this is something that's typically $99 a year. A new version comes out every year.
Right.
It's often on sale, actually. So you can sometimes get it for $60 or $80, depending on what the deal is. I buy it on average once every 2 years. Because for me, and actually I'm probably going to skip a third year this time, because over time, like, the benefits just don't seem to add up. So you don't actually have to upgrade every year if you don't want to. And then if you want to hold on to it for an additional year, you might decide 2 years down the road is, you know, $50. It's actually reasonable. And they always do a really neat job of supporting the native, you know, features of the new version of the OS. So, for example, if you're running Mac OS Mojave and you put it in dark mode, it will put your Windows apps in dark mode, too. This is kind of a cool thing. Anyway, that's not my pick. I just talked.
Never mind.
That's not my actual pick. So for Windows users, though, Parallels actually makes other apps, too. And so they have a couple of them. The one I wanted to talk about is something called Parallels Desktop. Is called Parallels Toolbox. So this is actually available on the Mac and on Windows. It's $20 a year, so you do have to pay for it for a year. But the reason I'm recommending it is it's basically like a panel that comes up on the side of the screen on a Mac. It kind of comes down from the menu bar. The tools vary a little bit between Mac and Windows. There are actually more tools on the Mac side because, of course, you know, they're kind of heavy on the Mac. But it has these really useful utilities. Some of them are just things we might have in the system already, like a way to toggle Do Not Disturb. And you can say, well, yeah, it's in there, but it's a little more convoluted. But the things that are big on this for me are it has amazing screen recording capabilities. So you can record an area of the screen. You can record the entire screen, obviously. You could record just a window. You can choose the audio device. So if you want to do like a narration over it live, or you could record it later, you can, you know, just get the sound from the system. So for someone like me who needs to do this kind of thing infrequently, but I would do it more if it wasn't so expensive normally, $20 a year for this? Like, yeah. This is crazy good quality. Yeah. Something like Camtasia costs a couple hundred dollars. And then it has all these other things. It does video conversion. If you're browsing a YouTube site, a YouTube video, you can choose to download the video from it. It has lots of things for people who do like live presentations, a presentation mode and changing the resolution. You could record just audio with this thing. It's just kind of an amazing set of functionality, you know, depending on your needs. In my case, this is like a no-brainer, and it's $20 a year. I mean, it's
so
cheap.
What's it called again? I have never heard of this.
It's called Parallels Toolbox.
Toolbox, okay.
Yeah, so I'll review it soon. I just wanted to mention it.
Do you need to have Parallels?
No.
No.
No, you just buy
it. It's a separate thing.
I should say, if you do buy Parallels Desktop, this comes with it.
All right, I get it.
Yeah, okay. So if you already have it, you get it.
Oh, I might have to upgrade to the new Parallels. That's pretty sweet.
It's been around. It's not brand new. So if you have an older version of Parallels, you'll have it there too.
Never noticed it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I know. Wow. So if on the Mac, you'll see a little toolbox looking icon. It has a little bit of red in it, I think. And that will bring down that pane that I was talking about. On Windows, it's a tray app, and you can, you know, leave it visible if you want.
That puts them over Parallels over the top over Fusion.
Yeah, no, this thing is incredible.
I've been using Fusion for the last few years. I'll upgrade my Parallels. Yeah,
but even nice. You know, for people on Windows, I mean, this is if you need this kind of thing, and anyone who's looked into screen recording knows, like the stuff you have to buy. Yeah.
Camtasia is really expensive,
It's you know, like, it's good, but this is. This is really inexpensive.
Nice. Yeah. Are you going to use this for the books?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't put I can't put video in the book. But one thing I've been thinking about is that there should be a web version of the book, and maybe for future books. And what I was thinking was that I could do videos and put those on the web version. You know. So this is something that's kind of held me back. The video issue, because you know, it requires a certain form of expertise as well. And actually, I've been experimenting with this, especially over the past weekend, and the video recording stuff is amazing. Like, it's really, really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. That's a good tip. Like it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, Mary Jo, the onus is on you now for your enterprise pick of the week.
So late last week, a number of Office 365 users started saying they couldn't log in to Office 365. And they thought they were having activation issues for the apps.
That happened to me.
Yeah. Well, the more interesting piece of this whole thing is 2 days before this happened, a guy who was a Mac user tipped me and he said, you know, I haven't been able to log into my local Office apps for like weeks.
Yeah.
And there's a thread on it and like Microsoft's not doing anything. And then this happened right after that. A lot of people were unable to sign in for a number of hours. So Microsoft did fix this, but it does seem like it was possibly an authentication issue behind it, although they have not issued a postmortem on this at all, and I don't think they're going to. But there were a lot of tips around people saying what you need to do is turn off your two-factor authentication and then sign out of Office, then re-enable it, and then sign back in. And it seems to be fixing it. So after a couple days, even the Mac and iOS users said, yes, they have fixed it. They've done something to fix it. So people have been asking me since that happened, what was the cause and what's Microsoft doing to make sure it doesn't happen again? And the answer is, we don't know and I don't know. But if you were wondering what happened last week, this is what happened to you. And a related tip, as of September, if you are an Office 365 or Office 2019 beta user on the Mac, you will have to be running at least macOS Sierra 10.12, or you won't be able to sign in anymore to Office 365. Just be aware, starting next month. And one little, not actually related tip, but something worth noting. I a week ago, reviewed the Microsoft Ignite session list. I looked through 620 odd sessions and checked out what was happening and wrote a post about it. Well, there are now 1,100 Ignite sessions on the list. So if you checked it once and you said, I don't really see anything I like, go back and look at the list because there's a lot more, including a number of sessions about Windows Update. So I think, Microsoft's been hearing a lot of complaints about people, especially IT pros, about how the Windows as a service process is and is not working, mostly is not working for them. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about this at Ignite. And don't get your hopes up. I don't think they're going to stop doing two feature updates a year, but I think they're going to try to make things a little more palatable. I can't make any promises on patch quality, but they're going to be doing new tools, new processes and such to try to make it easier for IT pros to take on the two feature updates or even just one feature update if you delay them per year.
And so, you're going to be at Ignite this year.
Yeah, we are going to be at Ignite.
So excited.
A little more palatable is an excellent marketing tagline.
Yeah.
The new version.
Not as horrible.
It's a little more palatable.
It's a little. It's
less
a
horrible
touch.
Now.
Don't choke more back the vomit as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep your hopes up, Buttercup. It's a little less unpalatable.
I have an Xbox code name.
All right.
Oh, finally.
Sorry. We were distracted. Go ahead.
Xbox code name. And I don't think this has been announced yet, but Paul will know. Xbox All Access, which we keep hearing about.
Yep.
The code name is Project Largo, the walking cat found out.
Largo.
And he said on Twitter and within the past couple of days, coming soon. And then he said soon-ish. But they didn't announce this at Gamescom, right?
There's all kinds of things they didn't announce at Gamescom. Like, yeah. Where's the new Elite controller?
Oh, yeah.
Well, didn't they kind of
new hardware.
They tipped that they were going to do that.
Major
and then
Nelson
it was like,
blew
no, we're not
it.
Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, brother. There are like 1,000 different
controller.
Bundles.
It was a PUBG controller, right?
That's actually pretty cool.
Oh, it's not just like a regular one with a sticker on it?
No, it has, what do you call them, trigger, something unique about the triggers. I already forgot what it was called. Hmm. Trigger, what is that?
Trigger anyway. Hips. Grips.
Trigger hips. Trigger grips. Thank you.
Hey, trigger hips. Trigger.
I have trigger hips. It's a, it came from my parents.
Okay.
And it sounded like hips, but it was grips. Okay.
Close. At least you remembered it. I couldn't even think of it. It's good.
She walked into my life with her trigger hips.
With her trigger hips.
Yeah. Why is it called Largo? I don't know.
Key Largo.
Key Largo, yeah. But any other reasons?
No. Okay, we're going to be dealing with like Jimmy Buffett songs.
I think we need a beer. Everybody. Beer okay. Me, Mary Jo.
Right. So Evil Twin in Brooklyn always comes up with the best beer names. And they did not disappoint with their latest collaboration. The name of the beer is That's What Happens When You Let Dad Out of the House. Check
amazing.
Out the label, though.
Dad
the
has awesome. A nunchuck. He's wearing it. He's a yellow belt karate master, and he's riding one of those hoverboards with his Reeboks with the padded ankles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so what
happens.
Is this beer? It's a sour IPA, which is a really cool style if you've never tried one. It's an IPA that's more sour than it is bitter. And the way they make this one sour.
Wait, are you selling this one?
No, it's good, guys. It's refreshing. It's like a sours. Lemonade almost. Yeah. This one has pineapple, guanabana, vanilla, and milk sugar all in one beer. And it's only 6.5%. You could drink more than one and not end up on a hoverboard, maybe.
Do they add the vanilla and milk sugar after they make the beer, or?
I believe so. I believe, like, at the end, it's kind of like, and, you know, add this in as, like, a flavoring and aroma kind of thing.
Wow.
I've never made a beer with milk sugar, so I don't exactly
evil
know.
Evil Twin
but.
Brewing, Hoof-Hearted Brewing. That's what you get. That's what happens.
That's what happens when you let dad out of the house.
Let dad out of the house.
I still, my personal favorite is still, I think it's 667, The Neighbor of the Beast.
Yeah, that was good too. That was Evil Twin, I think, right?
Yeah. It was from, I think it was a Connecticut based
That's
brewery.
Very funny.
It's excellent. Yeah. Yeah, it's just excellent. Yeah.
The Neighbor of the Beast.
Oh, and we did mention Ignite, so we should
yeah,
say
let's talk about the calendar time. Yeah. Calendar time.
Right. Yeah, Windows Weekly is going to be live at Ignite. So if you're going to the show in Orlando, we're going to be doing it on Tuesday instead of Wednesday.
September 25th. Leo
Actually,
will
can
be
I ask
back.
You a question about this? Somebody already asked me this on email. If we're in the podcast center, which is wherever it is in this convention center, someone who's not at Ignite but lives in that area, they can't get into this, can they?
Probably not. We've done that once at another show, and it was such a nightmare yep. to do that. Because they have sure. to get a wristband. They yeah. have to be escorted. Yeah. So
now,
I think,
listen,
no, but we are.
God help you if you try to learn anything at the show. You have to go right to the podcast, and then you leave.
No, you get out.
Yeah.
No, we're going to do a meetup, too. We don't have the specifics yet on that. But if you could come to the meetup and hang out with us, right. even if you
that's
can't go
I,
to the
That's what
show.
I told them, yeah.
Good,
yeah.
good, yeah.
And you're going
but
to
you're
Dublin
show, come find
in October. Yeah. I'm so jealous.
Yep. Dublin. We're going to do Windows Weekly live from the Micro Warehouse Cloud Camp October 17th at our usual time for Windows Weekly. So it'll be night for us in Dublin. But we'll be there. And we're speaking there. And then there's going to be a meetup also.
Oh,
I'm sure there will be some beer consumed at some point.
So cool.
If not some Irish whiskey.
Yes, also that.
I feel like somebody in Dublin invited me and Steve to do security now there. I wonder if it was the same event.
Oh,
I bet it was. Was it Aidan Quinn?
I don't remember. Finn, I forwarded.
Sorry.
I can't go because I've just been, you know, gone.
Sure. Yeah.
It, you know, wouldn't do to have two vacations in the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I forwarded it on to Steve, so who knows? It'd be kind of fun if you were out there.
Yeah, yeah. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just looking.
Hopefully there'll be some awesome, you know, Windows vulnerability that week. If we could only be that lucky.
And look who I have here.
Yeah, cover it live.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so both of those coming up. Looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This was from Mick Ryan. He's a board member with the OWASP Dublin chapter. Mm-hmm. This is something different, I think.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Kind of, yeah.
There's a lot of tech stuff in Dublin.
Dublin, oh yeah, hell yeah.
You know, it's kind of a tech center. Yeah.
All right, kids, we're done with the show for the week. I'll be back next week, don't worry. Not going to leave you on the lurch just
so
yet.
How long are you going to be gone when you do go away? 2 weeks?
Maybe a little longer.
Are you serious?
I am going to be gone August 29th through September 22nd.
Oh, you are serious. My God.
25 days starting in sunny Barcelona and ending in sunny Barcelona.
I mean this in the most friendly way imaginable.
You lie.
I hate you. How dare you?
You just got back. You had a wonderful trip.
Yeah.
I don't have to bring kids, so there's a plus for that. And I'm going to be on a boat where they're going to wait on me hand and foot for 3 weeks.
No, it sounds terrible. I just hope you're able to endure it.
Oh, man. You know, it is my dream when I retire.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, dream one is that I get to retire at some point.
Of course.
Dream two would be that I then move onto a boat for at least 6 months and just travel around the world.
Well, I want to move onto a train and travel around for 6 months.
Train's not quite as nice.
Probably not the same train.
Not Amtrak.
It's like an intercontinental thing. You know, you can go across the bottom of Canada.
That's a beautiful ride.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
That's supposed to be gorgeous. I would like to do that. And then there's
rail pass in Europe for a month.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's do that together. You and me. Be like a buddy movie.
There was an international incident today in Berlin.
I told you not to climb the Reichstag, Paul.
Exactly. I can't hear you.
All right, kids. Yep. See you next week, and then I'll say my farewells. I can't remember if it's Megan or Jason or both. I don't know who's hosting the show, but you're in good hands.
Both terrible, so it doesn't matter.
No, stop it. You're gonna have a great time. Exactly. No, Father Robert. That's the only thing. Although we can't really get rid of the guy.
Good.
He's gonna be on Twitter on Sunday, and then he's coming back for Salesforce. Ooh. Like 2 weeks later, he's going to Rome and he's coming back. So we'll see.
I will see him in Rome. It will happen.
To ask him for the super secret catacombs tour. Well, I guess it's not so secret anymore.
What I want is the super secret roof tour.
Yeah, that too.
I have a little speech I'd like to give to the assembled masses.
Then you'll have to get off Twitter.
Pop-em. Ooh, that looks like Paul Theroux up there.
Yep. Yeah. I see smoke.
I see smoke. And Paul Theroux. But he's dressed beautifully. Yeah. Thank you, Paul Theroux. You'll find him at THURROTT. Theroux.com. You'll also find his books at leanpub.com. And don't forget that Windows 10 Field Guide with all of its additional features like the posters and the things and the chess set and all sorts of stuff that comes with it. Chess set not included.
I like the chess set. Terry Morrison used to be the king, but now we have a little hole there.
Mary Jo Foley, she writes about Microsoft all the time at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Together, they join me every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch live, you can. On our website, twit.tv/live, easy to remember, twit.tv/live. There's, I think, a bunch of live streams, including, I don't know if Mixer's back, but will be Mixer and Twitch and YouTube. And there's also audio-only streams, a couple of those, too, so you can listen at your convenience. If you do, participate with the show live, you should go in the chat room. Because they're talking about things that have nothing to do with the show almost all the time. No, they're the kids who are watching the show, and it's fun to be the kids in the back of the class. You can also join us in studio. Captain Sam and Marcel are here. Marcel, visiting us. Nice to see you both. Captain Sam, just retired from the Merchant Marine. How many years were you a Merchant Mariner? 41 years.
Well, you guys were a lot quieter than those last jokers, am I right?
No kidding.
I think he's coming back. He had a good time. Yeah. Yeah, and I thought it's nice to have a live audience. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to be in studio, it's easy enough. Just email tickets at twit.tv. This show has a limited capacity because we're in my office, so maybe six people at most. But for shows like Mac Break and This Week in Google and Twit in the other room in Studio A, we can accommodate large groups. Yeah.
This thing you're in, this replica of the cottage, right?
Pretty good, isn't it?
It should be in the Smithsonian.
It will. Yeah, they'll dismantle it and put it there. People go, who's that?
Somewhere in the back, there'll be like a copy of the Delphi 3 Super Bible.
There is. I see it. I look at it every day. That would be great. The whole thing has to go.
It would be us and Julia Childs.
Yeah, right. Her kitchen's there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. I would be nice. I don't think that podcasting is really.
Oh, Leo. Why? Why is that any worse than cooking on TV? The woman dropped a chicken on the floor. You're telling me we don't qualify?
Oh, my goodness. Let's brush this off. Wash it with a little wine. It'll be good as new.
That was podcasting in the 60s.
It was. It really was, actually.
Pretty much.
That's really very, very familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Early days of TV and early days of podcasting. Very similar. That's why I've been wearing a dress all this time. Thanks for just call me Uncle Leo. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.